Welcome to Dark Mood Woods, a Twin Peaks podcast presented by the Film Stage. Sorry for the portentous voice, but joining me is...
Nick Newman.
Of
the Film Stage.
You got it. And this is Ethan Vespi, also of the Film Stage, but even more notably of the hit podcast These Boys Are Good Boys. With two podcasts to my name, I think you can consider me a bit of a podcaster, podcast celebrity. Do they have an official term for that yet?
I suppose Patreon superstar would be the applicable term, but I don't believe These Boys Are Good Boys has a Patreon.
It'll get there. But either way, consider this really just leeching off the wild runaway success of that show.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Of course, this is going to get way more listens or hits or SoundCloud, whatever's. But Dick is very excited by this intro.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, getting down to business, Nick, what is this show?
So, I think the title clears it up well enough. This is, in fact, a Twin Peaks podcast, but this is perhaps a bit unusual for the Film Stage because we don't really cover much of any television. However, the upcoming third season of Twin Peaks is a very special exception. It is the return of David Lynch to long-form filmmaking, his first entry into that really since 2006's Inland Empire. I don't know how much one would count his Duran Duran concert movie, which he did for American Express, which I've actually never seen. Mm-hmm. It is perhaps the one Lynch-directed thing, along with some deleted scenes from Dune, that I have not seen. I don't know if that excludes me from this, but I have seen all of On the Air, the other show he created with Mark Frost.
Hell yeah.
So perhaps we can make up for it. This, you know, the return of Twin Peaks is, I think, by almost any cultural metric, a huge event. And granted, there is some traffic interest in it for us, because if you post about Twin Peaks anywhere, it will naturally get a lot of hits. But as managing editor of the site and as a great, great lover of David Lynch and Mark Frost's creation, it gives me immense pleasure to cover it this way, to kind of be right in the middle of it, or as much in the middle of it as somebody who has no personal attachment to the production itself can be. And it is perhaps worth noting that this podcast, in a sense, began quite a while ago, because on November 16th, 2014, at 9:32 p.m., my co-host, Ethan Vespi, sent me a DM on Twitter, which reads, "Oh, by the way, want to make a blood pact now to do a to-be-continued conversation thing about Twin Peaks Season 3 in 2016. For those who don't know, To Be Continued was a conversational critical review website, which is no longer active, I believe. The march of time has been so relentless that it has taken the website that was referenced in this. However, I did immediately counter with, what about doing it on the Film Stage? To which Ethan replied, as long as they pay in larger amounts of cocaine. Now, I'm not going to imply anything about the Film Stage's payment system, but I'll just say we're here right now. So, with that, this is a podcast about Twin Peaks, which I don't think will be necessarily be in short supply in the coming weeks and months. It wasn't really in short supply in the preceding weeks and months either. So why listen to this one? I can't necessarily answer that, except to say that this is a podcast hosted by two people who have a long-standing deep love for and knowledge of the series, its prequel film, the missing pieces, the 90-minute sort of side movie that was made from Fire Walk With Me. Pretty much everything Twin Peaks related, I like to think. How many Twin Peaks podcast co-hosts have listened to the entire Twin Peaks archive, which is something like 9.5 hours of music from the show and the movie, right? Mm-hmm. How many people have read Dale Cooper, My Life, My Tapes. I can't say, but I know I have.
Well, that being said, neither of us was actually alive when the show was on air, so...
No. I was born about 7 months after Fire Walk With Me entered theaters. So it is fascinating that this is really the first new Twin Peaks material released in my lifetime.
Not counting the Japanese coffee ads, which was 94-5, I believe?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, which are truly wonderful, the Georgia coffee ads. So all that being said, hopefully this sort of little banter between us will be indicative of what's to come. We'll talk about it knowledgeably, hopefully amusingly. Won't take ourselves too seriously, but we'll be in depth. And this we are calling the pilot episode, which I think is appropriate because in the Twin Peaks production cycle, there was the pilot episode. And then after that, there was episode one. And after that, there was episode two. And vice versa, until you get to episode 29.
I mean, if you remember the season one Artisan DVD set, which I believe was released in the fall of 2001, I mean, it tricked a lot of people, I think, because it employed that exact structure. The pilot was not included for rights issues, and it was episode one, actually episode two, to episode seven, episode eight, so... Mm-hmm. Think of us like the Artisan DVD set, maybe.
I would think we're more the gold box set.
Not the missing pieces entire mystery.
we're more 480p than 1080p, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I think just even bringing up the show's home video histories opens up someone to understanding how complicated the legacy of this show actually is.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and just the oddity of it actually being back. And, I'll get to that in a second. Just to say that I sort of see this, and I think Ethan sees this, as the cobweb clearing episode in a way. Because there's really only so much interest someone can have in a person's personal history with Twin Peaks. Which is not to say they inherently have any interest at all. It's possible that they have no interest whatsoever. But there are just a few talking points. If you're going to be listening to this show, you can use this to get a bit familiar with us, our feelings on the show and the film, our expectations for the upcoming series, things of that sort. If, however, you just want to listen to reviews of the episodes, you could always skip ahead.
So the thing to note about the show, too, is it's 18 hours long, spread out from this Sunday to, I believe, September 3rd or 4th. So, I mean, we're going to have to create entertaining content for basically the entire summer. And, I mean, it's safe to say I think the show might test a lot of casual viewers' patience. Like, once Game of Thrones probably starts in July, all this hype may shift. But...
Yeah.
So, episode lengths will probably vary. Because I've listened to a few other of these podcasts, and... Typically, they can be 45 minutes to an hour long, but the thing is, I think them being, in retrospect, obviously gives them a little more to talk about. And the show, too, the original, we should note, moves, you know, it has the television structure. And assuming this is, as they say, a long film... The hour-long passage of it might not quite move the television recap or pace, to say the least.
Sure.
I mean, as they promised, I believe, Gary Nevins, the Showtime CEO, I believe his exact words were right, where this is the that DMX feeling, David Lynch?
Yeah, I believe he said that DMX feeling, David Lynch.
Yeah, so... Who knows what that will bring week in, week out. But hopefully we can find pretty good guests to make the show entertaining every week.
Sure, yeah. We should note that with the exception of the first episode, which I think will mostly be Ethan and I kind of getting the lay of the land of the series proper. We will try to have guests on week in and week out. Perhaps somebody listening. I don't know.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, we're not just going to have anybody on.
Well, I mean, I think a bit of what's going into this show, maybe from people who are colleagues of us on the film Twitter, is sort of maybe people are already assuming that this show won't exactly be recap or contemporary discourse friendly. I should mention my friend Simon Howe, who actually had me on his own podcast, The Lodgers, a few weeks ago, just wrote an article about this, kind of addressing different way the show might not fit in this contemporary landscape, particularly kind of the social justice criticism, the kind of more conventional structure of prestige television, and other reasons. But I think it's best we start, you know, with an open mind towards all of this. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I don't see why not. I mean, I think regarding expectations, that's a worthwhile talking point. So yeah, Ethan, where were you exactly when you found out Twin Peaks would be returning?
I believe I had watched an X-Files episode. I was in the habit of watching two X-Files episodes every morning in the fall of 2014 to the winter of 2015. And I believe I finished what would likely be a season 3 or 4 X-Files episode. So the show during its peak, really. And looking on Twitter, and I think it wasn't actually the announcement was the first thing I saw. I think it was a tweet about it saying it's coming back. And it was like, whoa. Now, we should note, I believe the Friday before the announcement, there had been clues it was going to happen.
Yeah, so there had been indication that something was going on, thanks to tweets from both David Lynch and Mark Frost.
And when it did break, it was likely on the level of the Affleck as Batman news in terms of dominating my Twitter feed. Again, I've talked to people. There's obviously, since that, curiously, there's been a lot of TV reboots, Gilmore Girls, X-Files, as I just mentioned. It seems like they announced them and then 8-9 months later they're on Netflix or Fox or whatever. And again, this was over 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to take that as a sign they're giving this their all.
Sure.
I mean, we should, I guess, also mention there was a period where it looked like it might not happen.
Yes, that's right.
Which, where were you when that happened?
Where was I when it seemed as if it wasn't going to happen, or when it was announced that Lynch would be returning?
Both.
When it seemed it wasn't going to happen, I was home, my childhood home. It was Easter Sunday, and I was visiting, and I was actually about to go back to school for my last stretch of college. My last stretch of college was starting up, and I had seen the news just before I left. And then, funny enough, I found out he was going to be returning. I was sitting in a diner in White Plains, New York, the evening of my college graduation. I had graduated, I'd done the ceremony, I had packed up my apartment, cleaned out my apartment, packed up my car, and I was sitting in a diner with my friend, about to go to the home of our mutual friend Keith Ulick, as a matter of fact. And I saw the news, and Keith actually called me to tell me that this had happened. So it was a big event, it was a big occasion, you know? And in that way, the whole revival has been really quite a long time coming. It was 2 days ago, it was the 2-year anniversary of my graduating college. So 2-year anniversary of the announcement itself, to give you an idea of how long we've been waiting.
And hopefully it'll all be worth it.
Hopefully it'll be worth it. I mean, I think the question of expectations is definitely worth talking about. I can say for my own part that I am immensely excited, but I am also of the mind that it is probably good to divorce myself as much as possible from the original series and Fire Walk With Me, even though Lynch has said that Fire Walk With Me is very essential to understanding where this new series will go. That's fine, because I know the film very well, so I can just move forward and try to watch it, but I haven't rewatched the show since the summer and fall of 2014 when the Blu-ray set came out. I don't feel much need to. I know it well enough, and I am of... I think one of the things that makes me most optimistic about this enterprise is that people involved with it, Lynch himself, are calling it the new Twin Peaks, not necessarily season three. It is kind of being spoken of as if it were its own entity. An entity that is growing out of a pre-existing property, yes, but something that should be taken on its own, which I think is kind of perpetuated further in Lynch calling it an 18-hour film, which he seems pretty obstinate about. I mean, I every interview where that comes up, he says, I see it as a film in 18 parts. Here's something I want to ask you about that I'm very curious regarding expectations, which is that there had been a long debate about whether, not a debate, but there had been sort of a waffling on Lynch's part about whether or not he would shoot it on film or digital. And it would be Lynch's first film shot project, I suppose, since Small Holland Drive. Ultimately, he decided to go digital, and I was surprised to see previews for it, because it looks fairly digital in a way I didn't necessarily anticipate. And you had tweeted, after seeing Fire Walk With Me just last week, that after seeing that film in particular, the sort of the downbeat, drab digital palette seems just right for this series. And I think maybe that's an interesting thing to bring up, at least briefly, before we go into the series proper. We can and should discuss it more once the series launches, but for the time being, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, we were just talking about the DVDs before, but I think something actually pretty consistent about the home video releases has been a very strong picture quality, and particularly how it brings out really the color palette of the original show. And just the fact, if you put the two side by side, not that we can put the entirety of the new show, we only have the previews side by side to the old show, it just gives me a good feeling that this isn't going for fan service necessarily. It's going to try to be its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. No, I definitely understand. I find myself maybe a little concerned, I think, because on the one hand, I love the sort of lush quality of Twin Peaks' original run, but I love even more particularly the D.V. Lynch of Inland Empire, for instance. And I would definitely have loved if he had shot this in the style of Inland Empire, for instance. But would a network ever fund something shot on mid-2000s consumer-grade digital video? Probably not. I am wondering how it's going to play, because it does look very downbeat, which is something that I find very curious.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I'm all for that, but I don't hope all 18 hours are necessarily incredibly downbeat. That might be bit much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I do wonder how the tone of the show is going to play. I feel like after Fire Walk With Me, which is so harrowing and particularly brutal, it will be weird to see, you know, one-eyed Nadine running around again. Things like that will definitely be odd. I wonder if there'll be a bit of whiplash there, just in terms of understanding of the whole project.
Well, I mean, you brought up that I just saw Fire Walk With Me last week. I mean, I've seen it many times before. This is the first time on film on the big screen, and the film was presented as part of the series at the Royal Cinema in Toronto, which is called Ladies of Burlesque, which does burlesque shows before film screenings, usually of like classic Hollywood cinema. And they did a Twin Peaks themed burlesque show right before the movie. But the programmer, she had to come out and sort of acknowledge that this is kind of crass to do a burlesque show before a film that's about, well, I won't spoil anything, but if you've seen the film, you know what it's about and why that would be crass. And it's sort of, as my friend Simon, who I just mentioned in his article, it kind of points at the complicated legacy of the show, in that I think it's always remembered as being quirkier and zanier than it actually is, when sort of, I think what really makes the show and the film great is the dark undercurrent beneath. And we'll see how much that comes to the forefront in this. And again, probably very much.
Yes. Yes, no. Well, again, it's a real wait and see. The whole thing is a wait and see. And I think that's part of why we're recording this episode in the first place, is just to kind of get some lay of the land, get some things out of the way.
The real question, who does Eddie Vedder play?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've spent pretty much a year asking myself who's going to play who. I mean, you know, I think Michael Cera is, among fans, is the big talking point, just because the prospect of Michael Cera in Twin Peaks is such an oddity. I did see he was on this show that's hosted on Filmstruck, the Criterion streaming service, where he talked about it a little bit. And he said he was only on set for an hour, which sort of confirms my suspicion that a lot of the people who are listed are going to be in it for, like, a scene.
Probably.
At most. But then there are certain things, such as Tim Roth is in this, and I don't know who cast Tim Roth for a one-scene thing. He's not exactly that kind of actor. You know, nobody really goes, ah-ha-ha, there's Tim Roth. Isn't that funny? You know, or Jennifer Jason Leigh, for instance. I will say that I have done a bit of spoiler digging, because I just couldn't help myself. And while I didn't see that much, the presence of some particular set photos combined with footage that was recently released has me wondering about certain things and certain ways the series might go, and how certain actors and characters might play into it. I wouldn't be surprised, Ethan, if you have had a similar experience and a similar reaction.
All I will say, I'll put up this official prediction.
Mm-hmm.
This summer, everyone's going to be like, whoa, Jim Belushi?
Mm.
I think he's going to steal the show. That's my prediction. I don't know if you actually saw, they were on Good Morning America today, and he was with Kyle and Dana and Kimmy. I feel okay referring to them by first name for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed very enthusiastic and just pretty charismatic, and it gave me a good feeling about him. I kind of get the feeling he's going to be like a Robert Loggia in Lost Highway-esque presence.
Mm, okay. Well, here's a question, sort of a larger Lynch-related question. Are there any outright bad performances in a Lynch movie? And James Marshall, as James Hurley, does not count, because that's too easy. So just let's scrap that one. Let's ask ourselves, are there any performances in a Lynch project that feel out of place or misguided? And I'm honestly not so sure. I was thinking about this. Perhaps something in Dune?
I was going to cut in an audio clip of the Baron spinning around and laughing here. But not that I can think of, honestly.
Mm. Yeah, that's the thing. I have an immense confidence in how he's casting it. I talked to a friend of mine, a Twin Peaks fan, who's skeptical kind of about this whole return, and he had specifically said, are you going to be able to watch this and have, like, a straight perception of it when Michael Cera shows up? And my answer is, let's just wait and see. Because, for me, the prospect of him and David Lynch collaborating is actually kind of wonderful, because I think there's genuinely something. I think there's something to be mined there. Sarah's particular rhythms as an actor, his start rhythms, kind of go with the Lynchian pauses, almost. And if you have seen Rick Alverson's Entertainment, you'll recall, well, what I think is far and away, well, perhaps, but likely the best scene in that film involves Michael Cera in an extremely creepy, unsettling appearance. So if it were something like that, it would work. If it's him being on the modern Invitation to Love, which is kind of what I suspect a lot of the new cast members are going to be on, if he's playing Lucy and Andy's son, which is what I'm also suspecting, I don't know. I am optimistic about it. I want to know who Ernie Hudson plays, which is very intriguing.
Name two actors you think should have been in it, but aren't.
Two actors who should have been in it. Justin Theroux. for one thing. I would actually say also maybe Laura Herring, because I feel like if you're going to bring Naomi Watts into it, why not throw in Laura Herring?
I'll say Martin Short and Robert Devi.
Okay, very good. I did say something along the lines of the presence of like Jim Belushi and Balthazar Getty kind of makes me wonder if this is going to be sort of his Polizio Tecchi film in a way. just some very sleazy actors in sort of law enforcement roles, just kind of like gross, terrible screen presences.
Be nice perhaps. To Balthazar. Time has not been kind to him.
Time has not been kind to him. Perhaps he deserves it. Have you ever read David Foster Wallace's piece?
Of course, yeah.
Yes, which casts Balthazar Getty as quite a prick. And the fact that he would make fun of David Lynch on the set, and David Lynch, from what I understand, I have it on good authority that Lynch not only read the piece, but referenced it frequently when he made college campus appearances. That makes me wonder what exactly has happened between them in the intervening decades.
Well, I mean, there was a motorcycle outside. It's James Hurley.
It sounds sort of Lynchian. There's kind of a Lynchian floating soundscape going on.
This is a very Lynchian neighborhood I live in.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think we've been rambling on about what we expect, but we can both definitely agree we're extremely excited, and not just for the show, and to bring you a great podcast. Right?
Yeah, podcast, the two of us, some more friends, some music, God, I don't know. I feel like the world is ours right now.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not quite, but
the world is Lynch's and Frost's.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was episode 0 of
Dark. The pilot.
The pilot of
yes.
Dark Mood Woods, a Twin Peaks podcast. Stay tuned all summer. This is Ethan.
This is Nick.